Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Soundcheck.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Before we get to tonight's show, which includes the rising UK star Leanne LaHavas and one of the UK's best-known mystery writers, I want to take you back to last week. Faith Saley, a member of our Soundcheck bullpen, raised the question of musical red flags in a relationship. You know, when you find out that the person you've been dating loves the music you hate, or even worse, hates the music that you love. We heard some pretty horrific, and I have to say, in all honesty, pretty funny stories from many of you about how musical differences could put the brakes on a relationship pretty fast. But all is not lost if you and your significant other can't agree on musical taste. Check out Gary in Bowling Green, Ohio. My fiancé is an opera singer and I research heavy metal culture, Gary writes. The common ground we've found is not to simply say, I hate this or that, but to ask why the other person likes or dislikes a piece. By doing this, we've both gained better understanding of one another and have had to develop a better understanding of our own taste. Interesting point. Now listen to this.
Hi, my name is Shannon from Norwalk, Connecticut. I was listening to a show and thought of my friends Ed and Louise. She loves disco. He's a huge fan of Bach. They can't stand each other's music. And the way they do it is whoever rides in the car is in charge of the radio. And that's just the rule.
So compromise, when the two of you have different musical tastes, is possible. Of course, it's way easier when the other person is someone you've made up. Take John Rebus, for example. He's the cantankerous, slightly boozy, Rolling Stone-loving detective who stars in the popular series of crime novels by Scottish author Ian Rankin. Now, Ian's character is a good 10 years older than Ian himself, so he's given Detective Rebus his own music. Rebus is constantly listening to The Stones and Cream and Rory Gallagher. But there is some overlap between the author and his creation, and Ian Rankin is here to talk about music on and off the page. Ian, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much.
So this is the return of a long-loved character who you attempted to retire some years ago. Sort of shades of Arthur Conan Doyle with Sherlock Holmes. Was just the demand so great that you had to bring him back?
Well, the reason he retired wasn't that I was fed up, bored with him as a character, or didn't have any further use for him. It was just in real life, he had reached the age of 60. And if you're a police detective in Scotland, you had to retire at 60. But I knew in my heart what he was doing, and he was working as a civilian for the police on cold cases. There's a real unit in Edinburgh that is staffed by three retired cops and one serving cop. He was doing that. So when, 5 years after retiring him, I got an idea for a story that was a cold case, I thought, oh, I can bring Rebus back. Mm. And it happened to coincide with the police in Scotland starting to think about changing the retirement age, so the old guys can apply to come back in again.
Now, this might be a good time. I'm sure this is a question that you've been asked in many variations over the years. But, you know, your stories are so rooted in real jobs, real offices, real cities, real roads, real little towns. Why is the character given such a kind of non-Scottish, you know, a name like Rebus?
Well, when I wrote the first book, I was a student. Majoring in English literature, I was doing a lot of deconstruction and post-structuralism theory. So to me, writing a novel was a bit like playing a game with the reader. Mm-hmm. And a rebus is a puzzle. It's a picture puzzle. And in the very first book, he's getting sent picture puzzles through the mail that are supposed to mean something to him. So I thought, hey, I'm going to be smart. I'm going to call him Rebus. It means puzzle. He's solving a puzzle. It was only meant to be one book. It was never meant to be a series. So I didn't think it mattered. Mm-hmm. And then years later, I met a guy in a pub in Edinburgh who introduced himself as Joe Rebus. And he said, oh, I thought you got the name from the phone book, you know, the telephone directory. So I said, I'd never looked in a telephone directory. He said, well, I'm there. So we got the telephone directory from behind the bar, and sure enough, Rebus, J for Joe, and his address is Rankin Drive.
No.
Yeah. So that's what he thought was, and it was just a complete coincidence.
Wow. And was he the only Rebus in the phone book?
Him and his son were the only two. It's a Polish surname. It's a fairly common surname in Poland, apparently. So later on in the Rebus series, I actually mentioned that Rebus has Polish roots. I didn't know until then.
So you're sort of still discovering things about this guy as you... That's as you make him up.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I keep writing books about him, is because I keep finding out more and more about him. The only way I can find out more about him is to keep writing books about him.
Now, his musical tastes, they're not exactly your musical tastes. He's a little older than you. But you've really sort of, you know, given us a great window into his soul with the kinds of music that he listens to as he's getting in the car, ready for a long drive, or after a hard day in the office. One of the songs that you picked for us today is Elvis Costello's Watching the Detectives. And aside from the detectives in the title, I was sort of wondering why you picked that. And then it occurred to me that this whole book starts with a mother coming up to John Rebus in his office, and she is ready to hear the worst about her daughter's disappearance.
Sure. I mean, when I got the idea for the book, it was a book about a parent who couldn't let go of a missing child. So a decade has passed. The child has never turned up again. The parent can't give up the search. So she goes to the cold case unit and says, look, I hope you've still got this on your books. I hope you're still working hard at it. And she happens to meet Rebus, and he gets involved in the story. The Elvis Costello track is just because it's A, a great tune, B, he's a great performer, but C, it's, if you're a crime writer, there's some genuinely good writing in that song.
Oh, man.
You know? I mean, it takes you straight back to noir, it takes you straight back to Chandler and Hammett. You know, the femme fatale is in there. She's, what is it, she's filing her nails while
they're dragging the lake.
I mean, that just sets up this image that's almost an archetypal image from American crime fiction. So I just love it. I just thought that Elvis Costello captured the mood and the atmosphere of a certain kind of crime writing.
Ian Rankin is my guest on Soundcheck. Here's that Elvis Costello song.
She's filing her nails while they're dragging the lake. She's watching the detective.
Costello's Watching the Detectives, the parents who are ready to hear the worst about their daughter's disappearance. That kind of sums up the story in Ian Rankin's book, Standing in Another Man's Grave, which has just been released here in the States. It's the return of his beloved character, John Rebus, and he's sort of comes to loggerheads with the character who has sort of replaced him in your recent writing. So it's Fox versus Rebus.
Yeah, I mean, having retired Rebus, I still wanted to write about cops. I think cops are really interesting characters, and a detective, a cop of that level, allows you to explore every layer of society, from the people at the top, the politicians, the business corporations, to the people at the bottom, the dispossessed, the disenfranchised, mm-hmm. the desperate. One character allows you to do that. So I invented Fox to take over from Rebus.
Now, the characters, you know, it's very difficult to kind of spell out all of these things, you know, class and family and, you know, where a person is on the social and cultural strata. But music does it.
I mean, with Rebus, you know, for me, it's a really good shorthand. When he goes to his record collection, if you've never read a Rebus book before, suddenly you start to get an inkling of the type of personality you're dealing with. As you say, class comes into it. He prefers the Stones to the Beatles, so that seems to be a kind of blue-collar thing, although the Stones were the more middle-class band, as it turns out.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a loner because he'll reach for the Van Morrison or the Leonard Cohen. He's not a gregarious party type. You know, he likes to listen on his own. He's quite introspective. So yeah, the kind of music he listens to gives you his age. Again, to go back to the Stones thing or Rory Gallagher, you get a notion of what kind of age this guy might be. So you've got his roots, you've got his class, you've got his philosophy of life, all encapsulated in his music collection. And that's why, you know, I really get frustrated now when I go to people's houses visiting people and I go, where's the record collection? I need to look at your albums to find out what kind of person you are. And the same with books. You know, you used to go to people's bookshelves and you'd go to their LP collection, you'd flick through both and you would get a sense of the kind of person you were dealing with.
Right. You know, our record collections, the music that means something to us, is it's more than just something we like. It's like, if you don't like my music, it's like you don't like my friends. You don't like the kind of person I am.
Yeah, there is something in that. Although opposites do often attract. I mean, my wife has not got the same musical taste as I have. She doesn't listen to much music, and that was true even when we first met, and we've known each other since 1981. But that, you know, she doesn't mind that I play stuff in my office all day while I'm working. She just goes off and does her own thing.
Now, what do you listen to while you're working? What can you listen to when you're writing?
Well, yeah, it's got to be instrumental. So electronica, some prog. I mean, going back to stuff like bands like Tangerine Dream. Tangerine Dream would be very good. It can have lyrics as long as I can't make out what the lyrics are. So the Cocteau Twins are okay because I can't make out what the heck she's singing about. So that's fine. A little bit of jazz sometimes, a little bit of Coleman Hawkins, which is really nice, gets you in a nice sort of frame. I'm not really listening to the music. I've not got it turned up. The volume's not turned up very high. It's just, it creates a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It puts me in a space that's my own space. It shuts out the world around me. So, you know, I can't hear what's happening out in the street, or if a telephone rings, maybe, you know, it doesn't interrupt me as much because I'm in this space. And my wife comes in and she says, how long have you been listening to that album for? Because I can put an album on repeat for 10 hours because it's just really playing in the background. And I'm not really listening to it. But I've got sort of certain albums that are, you know, that are my lodestone. If the writing isn't going well, I stick on one of these albums. Brian Eno, Music for Airports, is another good one. And his new one, Lux, is excellent as well for writing to. And it just gets me in a zone and I can start to write.
We're speaking with Ian Rankin, the crime novelist behind the popular series starring the detective inspector John Rebus. The latest novel, the 18th in the series, is called Standing in Another Man's Grave. It's out now here in the States, and we're talking about the role of music in his books and in Ian's life. And Jackie Levin is a musician who, obviously, you know, and John Rebus is like really into this guy. Mm. You know, very early on in this book, he mentions, in fact, the title is a Mondegreen,
a
misheard lyric.
Yeah, I love Mondegreens. I mean, I'm terrible for mishearing lyrics. I've done it all my life. You know, my ears are alight. Excuse me while I kiss this guy. I've misheard all of them, you know.
There's a bathroom on the right.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. I love them. They're great. They're puns. Jackie was a guy who I thought, he was in a band in the 80s, Doll by Doll, who were quite a kind of confrontational new wave band, took no prisoners. Then he was attacked one night in London and he lost his voice and he got very depressed and he turned to drugs and eventually weaned himself off drugs. He started up a charity and he started to sing and write music again. And this time he was looking at the Celtic stuff. He was going back to the kind of role of the troubadour. Mm. He was writing very muscular lyrics. He was writing about lost love and hard men, tough men who couldn't show their feelings. And I thought Rebus would love this guy. So in one of the early Rebus novels, Rebus has listened to Jackie Levin LP. What I didn't know was he was a fan of the books. He's on an airplane heading to a gig. He's reading a book and he sees himself mentioned. So he gets in touch. We start to talk to each other. Eventually, we did a show together called Jackie Levin Said. which was a 45-minute short story that I wrote on the themes he deals with, and he did some songs to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So 2011, late 2011, I'm starting to write the new book, and we're supposed to be doing some gigs together, and he takes ill, and he dies very suddenly. And this was just at a time when I was starting to write this book. So I was listening to his albums, and there was this one song, I Was Standing on Another Man's Grave, I Was Standing on Another Man's Grave. I thought, whoa, that's a great title. Then I looked at the lyric sheet, I was mishearing it. It was Standing in Another Man's Rain.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, I had my title. I said to my publisher, the title of this new book is going to be Standing in Another Man's Grave. And my publisher said, no, it isn't. It's far too long. cut it down to something manageable. So I went and did some research, and I said to them, look, I've discovered it's got the same number of letters as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that didn't do any harm, did it? So I was able to have my Jack 11 title.
And your character, Rebus, does exactly the same thing that you did in real life, which is here's what he thinks of the words, reaches for the lyric sheet, sees that that's in fact not the...
Yeah, and he's just been to a funeral, which is why it resonates with him. And it resonated with me because Jackie had just died as well.
Yeah. This is the late Scottish singer and songwriter Jackie Leven with the song Standing in Another Man's Rain.
Every man has his flower, though he knows it or not. From the mighty old English rose to the humble forget-me-not. Humble forget-me-not. I'm standing in a working-class gay bar in Hamburg, drinking ice-cold beer. Men quietly talking to each other. How did I get here? How did I get here? I look out the ancient window. It's Christmas time in the street. I see women shopping. Some are broken, some are chic. Some have got the North Sea pain from standing in another man's rain. Standing in another man's rain. Standing in another man's rain.
Standing in Another Man's Rain is the song from Jackie Leven, late Scottish folk musician. And a misheard lyric gave rise to the title of Ian Rankin's latest novel, Standing in Another Man's Grave, the 18th in the series featuring Detective Inspector John Rebus. And Ian Rankin with us here in the Soundcheck studio. You mentioned having done a recording with Jackie Leven. Music goes back. I mean, you were a would-be musician yourself, right?
You know, I'm like a lot of crime writers that I know, mystery writers. We're frustrated rock stars. We'd much rather be fronting a successful rock band. And I had my goal when I was... Well, actually, you know, when I was 11, 12, I invented a band in my head called The Amoebas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was their lead singer. I was Ian Caput. And I wrote their lyrics, and I designed their album sleeves, and I did a top 10 every week, which meant inventing 9 other bands and the personnel from those bands. And I would organize their tours, and they would go on chat shows, and I would script the chat shows for them. I was creating this world, this alternative world that was like, you know, wish fulfillment. And then when I was 17, 18, I was in a new wave band called the Dancing Pigs. I was the vocalist. Singer would be putting it too strongly. But that got it out of my system a little bit,
yeah.
A little bit. And sadly now, I think at the age of 52, stardom does not beckon.
Well, but the idea that at the age of 10 or 11 that you were already, you know, in a sense preparing for what has become your life's work.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I was fictionalizing everything, you know. I'd read a lot of comic books at that time, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and I would create my own. I would get bits of paper and fold them in half to make little booklets and, you know, break them up into squares and put little stick people in them and speech mm-hmm. bubbles. It wasn't enough for me to be a consumer. I wanted to create this stuff as well, whether
right.
it was music, whether it was song lyrics, whether it was cartoons. And, you know, by the time I got to university, I was in the band, I was writing poetry, the poetry was becoming the song lyrics. And then the poems, I noticed, were telling stories. They were not emotion recollected in tranquility, which is what Wordsworth said poetry was. Someone went here and this was a consequence. So it was natural to me to move to fiction, to move to prose. And the prose got longer and longer until the first one became a novel.
And yet you have been able to sort of scale back to song form on a couple of occasions.
I've written some lyrics. I mean, I wrote some lyrics for a young Edinburgh band called St. Jude's Infirmary. They wanted a song about nighttime in Edinburgh, and they got me to do the lyrics. And I've worked with a couple of people. I've worked with Aidan Muffett, who's used to be in a band called Arab Strap.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a song together called The Sixth Stone, which was about the sixth member of the Rolling Stones, who was born not too far away from where I grew up.
Is that the keyboardist, Ian Stewart?
Yeah, who was very happy to be in the background. But I like that notion of someone who's on the periphery. Yeah. Something amazing. Well, but they're quite happy to be there.
Let's hear a little bit of that song. It's called The Sixth Stone.
From beggars through to exile, he dug out rhythms like black diamonds. But cruising down Route 66, did you dream of lochs and highlands?
A little bit of The Sixth Stone, a collaboration between Aidan Moffat of the band Arab Strap and my guest, the crime novelist Ian Rankin. That's going back to, what, about 5 years?
Yeah, probably. It was a nice project. I forget whose idea it was, but they got writers and they paired them up with musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my misfortune to get Aidan Muffat, who's a genius lyricist. You're writing lyrics for a guy who writes amazing lyrics.
Uh-huh.
But he did a really nice fist of it. And we, a few years ago now in New York, we were in New York at the same time, and we actually did it live on stage in a Barnes & Noble, which was quite fun. And halfway through, he forgot the words, and so did I. So that was the end of that.
Have you seen the sort of all-star novelist band, you know, the Rock Bottom Remainders, Stephen King and Amy Tan and Dave Barry? And all?
I've seen versions, yeah, at various writers' conventions. And, you know, in the UK we had plans to do our own one, but it's never quite come off.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is if you had plans to do something
It seems like none of these writers' bands are looking for a bad vocalist. I'd have to be at the back shaking a tambourine, I think.
Ian Rankin sharing a playlist with us here on Soundcheck today. Let's move on to John Martin, who, you know, sort of had a moment, especially in the early 70s, it seems. You would have been very young, you know. This would have been more a John Rebus, you know, as opposed to
yeah.
you.
Well, it was a friend of mine at high school introduced me to Solid Air. And at the time, I was into sort of rock. I was listening to Status Quo and the sensational Alex Harvey Band. And I thought, well, it's a bit jazzy. It's not quite my thing. But it got beneath my skin. And, you know, like a few months later, I found myself buying the album. And it became this totemic thing for me. Whenever I move house now, and I set up the hi-fi system, the first record that goes on the deck is John Martin's Solid Air. And I saw him play live, and there was one time I was in London, and I saw him sitting outside a bar with friends, and I thought I could go over and say something, and I never did. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then he died, and that was the end of that. I was never going to get the chance to tell him how big a fan I was. But Solid Air is such a beautiful song. It's a terrific performance. He was one of these larger-than-life figures, you know, who you would love to have stood at a bar with just for half an hour, just before he got dangerous.
Here is John Martin with that song, Solid Air.
Tell you that I'm gonna hate when you're living on
That is the late John Martin and his song Solid Air. Ian Rankin's playlist on Soundcheck today. Ian Rankin's latest novel is called Standing in Another Man's Grave. It's just out here in the States. And Ian, you were talking about how you can listen to instrumental music when you're writing, or music with vocals if you can't make out the lyrics. I'm sure at this point you know every word to that song, but as I was listening, I was like,
It's very woozy. It's a very woozy song. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I like the way he slurs the vocals.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to be about Nick Drake, who was a good friend of his, and it was written after Nick Drake died.
Oh, okay.
So the kind of person in the song is supposed to be Nick Drake, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Who died in 74?
Yeah, so which was just about the time the album came out, I would have thought.
All right. So Ian Rankin sharing his playlist with us on Soundcheck today. This Mortal Coil, there's a band that has 90s written all over them.
Well, they weren't really a band, were they? It was a project put together by a record company boss. But he managed
this
to cherry pick.
This was 4AD Records.
Yeah. He managed to cherry pick his artists from his roster and put them together in interesting ways. It's a brilliant cover version of a great song. And Isabel Fraser from Cocteau Twins is singing it. I mean, it is the Cocteau Twins doing it. And she really makes it her own. She's got a great voice anyway. It's a shame that she doesn't do much. She just headlined some shows in London. I think called Meltdown, where they get an artist and they give them free reign to choose whichever artist they want to come and play on the bill. And then they do a little concert themselves. And apparently she was on blistering good form. She's a nervous wreck, which is why she doesn't do live stuff very often. Mm-hmm. And I know the Cocteau Twins were supposed to reunite to play the States a few years ago, and she pulled out at the last minute. But it's a song that I could never grow tired of, and her voice. I mean, I would listen to her recite her shopping list.
The song is Song to the Siren, which is a cover of a Tim Buckley song.
Yeah, and many people have covered it.
I mean, yeah.
It's one of those things that any singer, to prove their chops, will try and cover that song. But no one's ever done it with the kind of same intensity and the emotion that she brings to the performance.
From the project called This Mortal Coil, this is Song to the Siren.
On the floating shipless oceans, I did all my best to smile till your singing eyes and fingers drew me laughing to your eye, and you sang, said to me.
This Mortal Coil, the name of the project put together, featuring a bunch of the artists who recorded for the 4AD record label back in the late 80s, early 90s, and featuring there the vocals of Elizabeth Fraser from the band Cocteau Twins. Song to the Siren, a cover of an old song from Tim Buckley, who here in the States these days, Ian, is probably these days best known as the father of the late Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Great singer himself. You're very much an Edinburgh person, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it's a city that, consumes me. I never get tired of writing about it. I love to explore the place. It's a small city. It's the size of a decent-sized town, 500,000 people, but all the amenities of a city, but it feels like a village. Everybody knows everybody.
I mean, there's a lot of great music coming out of Scotland, but it seems like a lot of it is coming from Glasgow. What's the scene like in Edinburgh?
Well, Edinburgh's not got much of a music scene, it's true. I mean, Glasgow Art College gave us the Blue Nile and has given us many other bands since then, and lots of great actors as well. The stuff happening in Fife, which is where I grew up, so just north of Edinburgh, maybe 30, 40 miles north of Edinburgh, you'll find the Fence Collective. And the Fence Collective operate out of a tiny fishing village called Anstruther. And they're headed by a guy called King Creosote, Kenny Anderson. And he is starting to make waves now. He's starting to get noticed by the major labels. He's starting to get noticed by the Mercury Prize and various other music mm-hmm. prizes. But there's a whole bunch of them. Pictish Trail is another one. They've usually all got kind of fake names. And they're making great music. And they put on shows, they put on festivals, they press their own albums, they help each other out, they guest on each other's albums, they mm-hmm. tour together. So there's a real buzz about that. And they're showing that you can do it without a major label, and you can do it just as a kind of homegrown product, and it means you've got complete control.
Didn't King Creosote do a record with John Hopkins?
John Hopkins, Diamond Mine. Yeah.
Beautiful record.
Yeah.
Really.
Too short. It's
yeah,
only seven
yeah, it was
tracks.
Like an it was like an EP, yeah.
I won't let you fall.
So at this point, Ian, I need to ask you a tough question. Best album of 2012?
Well, the one that was the most pleasant surprise, and you know, because a lot of people I like brought albums out and I liked the albums, but I hadn't heard this band Django Django. And there is a real Scottish connection there. One of them is related to a guy from the Beta Band. And it sounds very Beta Bandish, I have to say, this album. But it's great. It's electronica, it's poppy, it's catchy, it's relentlessly good. I don't think there's a bad track on it. And it's their first album. I just hope they can repeat the process with their next album.
Mm-hmm. Well, they will be joining us here in the Soundcheck studio shortly.
I didn't know that's yeah. that's not set up, John. You know that. I didn't know that.
They all come through at one point or another. So we'll hear a little of Django Django to wrap things up today. My guest has been Ian Rankin, the crime novelist behind the popular series that stars the detective inspector John Rebus. The latest installment is the novel Standing in Another Man's Grave. It is out now. Ian Rankin, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck's next event, In the Green Space, features Eddie Huang, the bad boy chef, owner of the East Village restaurant Bauhaus, and, now, memoirist. The Taiwanese-American star of the New York gossip blogs will talk about his new book, Fresh Off the Boat. Plus, you'll see a live performance by Heems, formerly of the hip-hop group Das Racist. That's Thursday, January 31st, 2 p.m., In the Green Space, this Thursday. For tickets, go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Up next, what to do when Prince, yes, that Prince, calls you on the phone. Leanne LaHavas explains, and the British singer-songwriter performs in our studio. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The British singer Leanne LaHavas released her debut album last year, called Is Your Love Big Enough? It earned a nomination for the Mercury Prize. It also earned fans like Stevie Wonder and Prince. There's a story about Prince, by the way, but first,
Let's hear Leanne in our studio playing the song Age. It's Leanne LaHavas on Soundcheck.
Why do I love him? He don't love back. When I call his name, he turns his back. The weather is growing cold and I want him back again. I kinda know this other guy, but he's rather old enough to be my father, so he's not the one for me, 'cause I fancy younger men. I'm at a loss. Not a coincidence he left me, because my old man was ready to love me like the woman that I am. Ooh. So is it such a problem if he's old, as long as he does whatever he is told? I'm glad that it's just my heart that he stole and left my dignity alone. When in Rome we landed our first kiss, I slurred my words, but he pretended not to notice. And then he sat down to play. My heart sang a symphony, so far so swimmingly. I'm glad I got out to find my fish in that sea, and we've come so far. So who gives a damn about the ages we are? Ooh. So is it such a problem if he's old, as long as he does whatever he's told? I'm glad that it's just my heart that he stole and left my dignity alone. So is it such a problem if he's old, as long as he does whatever he's told? I know that I'm gonna survive the December cold, with somebody to retrieve my long lost soul. With somebody to retrieve my long lost soul.
Leanne LaHavas, live on Soundcheck. The song is called Age, and you'll find it on her debut album, Is Your Love Big Enough? That, of course, a live version from right here in the Soundcheck studio. I know I'm going to hate the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How old do you imagine the old man in that song is?
I'm so sorry. I hope you can afford me some artistic license,
okay.
Especially at the time I wrote that first verse.
Uh-huh.
I was 18 when I wrote that, and he was 32. The gap seemed huge.
Can I just say, I did not expect to hate the answer quite this much.
I am really,
really hating this answer
No, I'm really sorry. I just, you know, when you're 18.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
20 seems old when you're 18.
And so. 32 is now receding quickly in the rearview mirror. So let me ask you about the album has created all kinds of buzz, presumably at home, certainly here in the States.
Seems to have done, yes.
So usually when someone sort of appears out of nowhere, we think, wow, overnight success. But you've already said you were writing songs at least 5 years ago. So.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
A year ago,
yeah.
Would you have foreseen this kind of attention? And
well, that's the thing. At this point, a year ago now, it seems to have gone really fast, but I had just made my first EP, the first ever thing that I released, and I had the actual journey to finishing the record and it becoming a real thing had well and truly begun at that point. But yeah, I had come to New York actually in July of last year to do some songwriting with Matt Hales, who produced the record.
Mm-hmm. And who records under the name Aqualung.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so we just came here, kind of, you know, just to see what would happen, because he doesn't live here and neither do I. So we thought it would be cool to collaborate in a place where that was completely neutral. Mm-hmm. And I just
Are you
found
calling
it...
New York neutral?
No, I mean...
it's been called many things, Leanne. I've never heard anyone call New York neutral.
I mean, just because neither of us live here.
Right,
but
right.
I found it incredibly inspiring. I mean, we were here for 2 weeks and wrote 3 songs. And then one of those songs became the title track of the album.
The title track, which refers to Second Avenue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And then the other one became my first ever single, which was the leading track from the EP.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt the beginning a year
right.
ago.
Well, we can hear little echoes of your time in New York. The Brooklyn Bridge gets a shout out in another song.
Yeah, it's cinema.
Yeah. Now, the song Age, I mean, apart from the appalling sense of age that you display there.
I am so sorry.
the guitar part, the voicing of the chords, it's not just jazzy. It's like mid-20th century. I mean, that's like something out of the 30s or
Thank
something.
Thank you.
How did you learn to play that kind of guitar?
Well, I don't know. When I first started learning the guitar, I had seen just, you know, friends playing and looked at YouTube, and my dad had showed me some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really into like stuff like the Andrews Sisters and Billie Holiday. And there was a song actually that Ella Fitzgerald sang with the Ink Spots that I loved. And the older man introduced me to that song. And I just became obsessed with it. And it's called Cow Cow Boogie.
Ah.
And it has that rhythm.
Okay.
And I think subconsciously I had that in mind. And then just kind of.
So you kind of slipped this in the story there and then went right by it. But so Age, the song Age, is autobiographical.
Absolutely.
So there really was a younger guy and an older guy. And,
yes.
Okay.
And I talk a lot about the younger guy of the story in other songs
in
on the
other
album.
Songs. Okay.
And the older guy.
How do these guys feel about that?
Well, the older guy is still my boyfriend. So.
Oh, okay.
It's fine.
All right.
And he is my biggest fan. And the other guy, really, I have no idea.
Fair enough.
At this point, I don't mind.
We're speaking with Leanne LaHavas. Her album is called Is Your Love Big Enough? Her debut. I am really partial to the song Forget on your album. You want to play that for us?
I'd love to.
All right. Let's hear another bit of live music here in the Soundcheck studio. Leanne LaHavas is my guest, and this song appears on the album, Is Your Love Big Enough? But she'll play it live for us. It's called Forget.
Some
So pack away every verse and every rhyme. Forget all the words that let you break my heart. Forget that I'm the person tearing you apart. Of mind for free. So if you heed my sound advice, there's no need to tell you twice. There's no need to tell you twice.
Leanne LaHavas, live on Soundcheck. The song is called Forget. If you find yourself listening to the music and becoming a fan even as we speak, well, you're in good company, because Prince and Stevie Wonder have both turned out to be fans of yours, Leanne. How did you meet Prince? That was a phone thing first,
that,
right?
Yes. His manager got in touch with my manager. And I had just played a show the night before, and I woke up to a phone call saying that Prince would like to call me. And obviously I fell about in hysterics. I didn't believe it. It was truly unbelievable. So I was expecting a call for some time, and it didn't happen for a few weeks. So I thought it was. Gone away. I thought it was just a practical joke. But then one Saturday, my manager said, okay, make sure you have your phone with you, because Prince is going to call you tonight. And I was like, yep, got it, cool. And then obviously I went out, leaving my phone on my bed. I just went out without the phone. And then luckily I was with my boyfriend, so my manager called my boyfriend saying, are you with Leanne? Prince is calling her now. So we gave Prince my boyfriend's number, and we were in a very noisy bar at the time. I saw the phone ringing, and it was an unknown number, and I answered it and I couldn't hear him. So I went outside, and the road was really noisy as well. So I was like, Prince, I'm so sorry. I'm going to find a quiet place. And he was like, you sound busy. I can call back another time. And I'm like, no, it's fine. So, I found like an alleyway, like a dark alleyway. Went into the alleyway, and he said, it sounds like you're in an alleyway. So I spoke to Prince on the phone. I had to have the faith that it was actually him.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out that it was actually him. And his voice was, low, and he was very articulate and very witty. Mm-hmm. And charming.
And Stevie Wonder backstage at one of your shows?
Well, he attended one of the shows. Yeah. It was in LA, and it was amazing that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
I cried, actually. I cried when meeting him, and then cried after he played me a piece of new music that he'd been working on.
Wow.
It was so deeply moving, just because it was so good, and I'm a huge fan.
Who are your other music? I mean, you know, Prince and Stevie Wonder are certainly in a lot of people's pantheons.
Like the top two,
Who else was like an influence on you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I love Ella Fitzgerald, and I love Nina Simone. I love her attitude, you know, and her strength and her, you know, guts. And just, I really admire strong women in music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was growing up, I was a big fan of Lauryn Hill and the Fugees, and also the movie Sister Act 2, which is when I first saw her, and then went on to discover that she's actually multi-talented. So I've got her Unplugged album was probably the point where, that was probably the first piece of music I cried to.
Mm.
And discovered that she played guitar. So that was really inspiring as well.
See, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Can't you tell the way they have to mention how they helped you out? You're such a hopeless victim. Please don't do me any favors, Mr. Intentional.
Leanne LaHavas has been with us on Soundtrack. It's been a real pleasure having you here. Thank you so much.
It's been really great to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is Soundtrack.
Oh, their talk is seasoned to perfection. The road they walk, commanding your affection. They need to be needed, deceived by motivation. An opportunity. Why they're so important is without explanation. Please don't patronize me, Mr. Intentional. Oh, 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 oh. We give rise to each.
A little more of Mr. Intentional from Lauryn Hill's MTV Unplugged CD, a recording that was important to our guest, Leanne LaHavas. There's more from Leanne LaHavas on our website, including more conversation and an additional performance. Find it at soundcheck.org. Speaking of live music, join us online at 2 p.m. tomorrow to hear an in-studio performance by singer-songwriter Trixie Whitley. That's 2 p.m. tomorrow on our website, soundcheck.org. Coming up, a look at some great artists playing in New York this week. It's a Gig Alert Roundup. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's Monday, and you might be planning your live music options for the week if you're that kind of person, organized. Every day on soundcheck.org, we profile an artist that's playing out in New York this week, and we also post a free MP3 download from that artist, so you can give it a listen and see what you think. Here are the folks that we picked for this week. We've gotten so used to jazz bands featuring sax players and trumpeters and pianists that it may come as a shock to find that the earliest jazz bands featured instruments like the tuba and the banjo. Well, Cynthia Sayers out to reclaim the banjo's place in jazz. Her innovative playing has even landed her a spot in filmmaker Woody Allen's jazz band. Ella Miriam's Blues by banjo virtuoso Cynthia Sayer. She plays at Joe's Pub tomorrow. North Carolina band Alucatistas takes the first part of its name from a Charlie Parker song, but that doesn't mean they sound like the jazz great. You may hear echoes of the so-called minimalist movement in composers like Steve Reich and this duo's brand of avant-garde rock.
That's Alucatistas with Lighted Stairs. They're playing, along with Buke and Gace, at the Bowery Ballroom on Wednesday night. Noel Heru has been recording under the name Hooray for Earth in fits and starts since 2005, but his project really came together when he made his 2011 album True Loves, featuring contributions from various members of Brooklyn's noise pop scene and lots of electronic sounds.
Quiet heart, it's a quiet heart, it's a quiet heart, it's a quiet heart like a car alarm. Hollow chest, it's a hollow chest, on a solemn quest to bring a guest.
That's the band Hooray for Earth with True Loves, a song that you can download from our website, soundcheck.org. The band plays at the Knitting Factory on Thursday night. Join us online at noon tomorrow for another Parallel Play. AJ Jacobs of Esquire magazine is one of the smartest guys around, but he doesn't know much about country music. Tomorrow, AJ will once again be our human guinea pig as we challenge him to listen to a full hour of Nash FM, New York's new country music station. And while he listens, AJ will do a live chat with our staff and with you, our listeners, on soundcheck.org tomorrow at noon Eastern. Also, what's inside a new library of old sounds from nature? That's tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then. In the meantime, check us out online at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer.